Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġjub li l-kombixu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio for University Matters four students, and they are all from the European Students Organization, but they come from different areas of study here at the university, and I'd like to introduce them one by one. There is Laura Muscat and Jean-Paul Gatt, Clara Ketkuti and Albert Camilleri. And they've all come together today to talk about an event, a recent event, the Model Council of Europe. But perhaps before going into detail about this particular activity, perhaps I could ask Albert, first of all, welcome to you all. Perhaps I could ask Albert, who I know is a founder, president of this ESO, to tell us a little bit about the organization. I know it's 2 years old, you've just recently got Senate approval, and tell us why you put it together, why you decided to set it up.
Well, thank you first of all for your invitation. ESO started around 2 or 3 years ago. Basically, we were a group in our first year, and we started getting involved in different organizations on campus. And we also noticed that most faculties had a representative in an organization. For example, the arts had the ASA, the law course had the INSL, but there was a vacant space within the EDRC, which was the European Documentation Research Center. And as a group of friends, we said, why not create an organization which represents this body? The numbers were growing each year, so we thought it would be a good idea for this organization to set up. So we were around 4 to 5 people, and together with the help of KSU and some other members, we started drafting a statute, we started getting members involved, and we had our AGM in summer. We recruited some new members, and then we had a launch in Freshers' Week of 2 years ago. After that, ESO has been growing. We've had our difficulties, of course, but we've had a number of events, especially after the launch, a few debates, especially with the help of KSU. We involved ourselves in environmental fair, organizations days, etc. And this year I'm very proud to say that the new executive which has come in, we've really stepped up the gear. ESO has grown, it's fulfilling its potential. One of the aims I'd like to say on ESO, apart from being a representative for the students, is to bring Europe closer to the students, and not just the institute students, but the whole campus students.
I think we should say that the EDRC has now morphed into the Institute
exactly,
of European
Studies. Exactly, the EDRC has now developed into an institute, which really says a lot about the institute, because it has also strived in being better equipped and better there for the students, and so it has ESO. And in fact, only a few months ago we received an official letter from the Senate, which is one of the highest bodies at university, saying that we are now officially recognized as a Senate-approved organization. We are now part of a body of organizations which is part of KPS, which is the social policy of KSU. And together with these organizations, now we have a say in what goes on in KSU and in university social life.
That's great. It's lovely to see the enthusiasm, and of course it's a growing area of interest, European studies, so I think it must have been, certainly was a very good idea to set up this this organization. This activity that we've sort of come together to speak about today was this Model Council of Europe. Perhaps, Laura, you could start off telling us a little bit about the actual activity itself.
Well, first the idea came about because most of the executive has participated in similar events like Common European Assembly, EU Council Simulation, etc., etc. So we said, why not organize something on a smaller scale? We saw that there was a bit of student apathy, and as well we wanted students to involve themselves within the organisation and in student life. So we came up with this idea of Model Council of Europe. No one had done it before. Anyway, and we started coming up with ideas, what the main topic would be about, how we're going to involve students and who.
And so, this was open to not only your own ESO members, but also to students from other areas of study at the university.
In fact, we invited international relations students, law students, even art students. And we had as well some students from foreign universities apply. For example, there was a student who was doing her LLM in a British university. And we had as well two people from an NGO as well who participated. So we managed to get a wide range of participants. Then obviously we had to see who to invite as well as speakers, the topic which we wanted to debate about.
About the students who participated, you had, obviously you were interested in getting people to come as an audience, but also people to represent the countries of the Council of Europe. How did you actually go about that choice?
Well, first of all, there are 47 countries within the Council of Europe. So initially we wanted all 47 countries to be represented, but obviously it was quite difficult. But anyway, we're ambitious and we managed to have 22 countries participating. All students applied. We sent them the resolution and how the procedure was and how the debate was going to be held, and and topic was going to be debated. And then we assigned a country for each, either a student who wanted to play the country as on his own individually, or else in a group of two.
And how did you go about choosing the theme? This was human trafficking, so a very hot and interesting subject, of course.
Well, human trafficking, everyone knows about it. Everyone is talking about it, but unfortunately, no one is doing enough about it. We studied human rights during our first semester, and this lesson inspired us so much, and we learned so much from it. In fact, I did a presentation on human trafficking, so that's where the idea came about. We all discussed it together within the executive, and it was something that that only a few cases had been decided upon within the Court of Human Rights and within the European Court of Human Rights. So we wanted to create sort of an awareness about it.
It was a topical issue.
It was an important issue, even because in Malta there is human trafficking, but it's not. You can't see it. You hear about it, but can't see it. And recently there was an important case as well in Malta, which was decided upon, and we wanted to discuss the topic further.
What about you, Jean-Paul? What was your participation in this?
Well, we did a lot. Apart from speakers, well, my main job was replying to all the emails and
organizing
the venue, speaking with Europe, with the representative from Europe House, which I thank as well. She helped us a lot, and
organizing
sponsors.
These are the logistics of the event, which are the background work that has to be done. Before the event actually takes place. Did you have time then to represent a country, or you left that to other people?
No, I left that to other people.
And you mentioned finding the speakers. I know you had Judge Giovanni Bonello as your main speaker. That must have been an interesting experience for everybody, because he's got such experience himself in the area of human rights.
When we were thinking about who could we ask to come at the Model Council of Europe, the first person to pop in mind is just the personification of human rights for Malta.
Absolutely.
Which is Judge Dr. Giovanni Bonello. And when we asked him, he accepted our invitation immediately. And
I know that he's very keen to involve himself with student initiatives, definitely.
Yes. While he told us that his main area, his main competence is not human trafficking, well, he did still manage to this, when he made the speech and intervention, the way he tackled the problem is really impressive and a lot of thought. Yes,
he has a philosophical point of view as well, the ethical. He looks at everything in a very much sort of the bigger picture, really.
It's just a kickoff point to start the debate, actually. It's
because he brought about an awareness that proper legislation is lacking in Europe and in the world. So he talked about, like I said before, that only one case was decided upon in the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. Only four cases were decided upon in the European Court of Human Rights on human trafficking as well, and forced labour, which is Article 4. So that's what he wanted to bring about, and that's how the debate started. In fact, Clara can elaborate more on that.
Clara was representing,
I was representing Romania.
And you're not a European studies student, are you?
No, I'm an international relations student, but I already took part in many European assemblies, so I sort of knew the procedure.
And what struck you about this particular topic? What sort of inspired your interest?
Incidentally, I was thinking about doing an assignment for my course about human trafficking, so I thought it would be a good opportunity to research on the subject and actually get the chance to debate with a couple of teams, and even to listen to the speech by Dr. Giovanni Bonello. It was inspiring. I mean, everyone can tell you the same thing.
So you had 2 minutes to put your case or to talk about
the country's position.
Exactly. And that required some research, I presume.
Yes, it did. It will always, I mean, you'll never know what country you're going to get. And then when you get to your country and you think, okay, Romania, I don't know very much about Romania. So you'd obviously have to research what the government is doing, even what NGOs are doing at the same time. Like in my country's case, NGOs are doing far more about the problem than the government, but I never heard of the NGOs personally before, so I ended up researching the NGOs, even what the Council of Europe does. It took a lot of background, but at the end of the day, it's worth it.
And what about the other countries that were represented? They each had to give their 2 minutes presentation.
Yes. Uh-huh. More or less, all the countries sort of felt the need for more awareness, more security. The problem, and then at the end of the day when it came to even amending the resolution, was how to go about it. A lot of countries, particularly Bosnia, Albania, Armenia, objected to the idea of standardizing a security system. They all wanted sort of to have state sovereignty come into play and discussion and whatever. So that was a procedural point rather than agreement on whether the problem needs to be tackled or not. Another thing which was not mentioned, for example, was legalizing prostitution. It was a clause in the resolution. And when we finished with the whole debate, it did not come up. And even Dr. Giovanni Bonello himself, he said sort of how liberal you are. You all didn't object to legalizing it. I think it was quite a sweeping statement to put in the resolution. I don't think any country wanted to address, to go that far, that deep into it.
So it's interesting, because obviously you have to argue from the point of view, not your own personal point
exactly.
of view, from the point of view of the country.
Uh-huh.
In Romania, I think, does seem to have a problem. Perceive it as an outsider who just sort of reads the news in the newspapers, looks at the news in the newspapers. They seem to have this problem because it's one of the poorer countries of Europe, so they tend to, the citizens tend to shift, and there is this problem of how people are being drawn away from Romania with promises of a lot of good jobs, and then they sort of
issues like this for a country like Romania, Bulgaria, all of Eastern Europe, more or less, they have so big a problem with this as a transit, as a departure, as even as a destination for human trafficking. We've gained a lot of expertise in the field on the issue. So the Council of Europe needs to take into account what we can bring to the discussion on the issue. It's a good chance for publicity, sort of, for the state, to sort of give input into the discussion.
And also the countries of Eastern Europe, one mustn't forget, are like border countries in a way. So yes, we're not just exactly talking about internal shifting of people uh-huh from Eastern Europe to Western Europe, but also people coming in from beyond mm-hmm the borders of Romania.
It was a point that came up very often. I mean, part of the resolution was also the problem of the Schengen zone. Countries like Romania are actually part of the Schengen zone, now being part of Europe. And we get human trafficking victims from China, from the Honduras. So the minute they find a Schengen zone country, it's so much easier for traffickers to actually get them into Europe. And that's part of the problem, us being on the border.
Yes, exactly. I like that, us.
Yes.
I suppose Malta is a border as well.
Exactly.
But being an island, of course, mm-hmm it has a sort of maybe it has a slightly less porous border uh-huh than other countries that are perceived as border countries. Albert, about the organisation of the event, I know that there are similar, I mean, I've spoken to Laura in other programmes about doing this kind of model system, the idea of doing a model. Do you feel that it was successful in this case?
Yes. As I said, the idea of the organisation itself was to bring Europe closer, and this event helped in that. And when we decided to pursue this event, I remember Roderick, for example, who is our Secretary General, had really pushed for this event to happen because he had took part in similar events. We said that this can, you know, connect ESO to its members. And in doing so, we wanted to open up perhaps students' eyes about the future of education. At the moment, and as we will explain later on, as ESO we're developing maybe a new system of how lectures, especially at university, should be drawn up. And doing similar workshops, doing similar events, we think that can help, as Clara said, stimulate research and stimulate debate. So in the end, this event was successful in that it did bring students like Clara, for example, here to research a topic without having an exam. Because it was something she wanted to do.
Without the pressure.
Exactly. Without the pressure, something which interests her at the end of the day, and something which she then, instead of writing it down, but saying it out loud in front of a public, which public speaking is a very, very important thing, as this debate was.
In fact, this is what I'd like to talk about as well. The actual physical debating situation. I've been to several events which have purported to be debating events mm-hmm here on campus. But in actual fact, I've rarely found that the debating has been structured, has been successful. Even if, obviously, you could have a very strict debate, like, I know, the BBC Doha debates, where you've got two people on one side, two people on the other, you have the resolution, they say their bit, and then there's discussion from the floor, and then there's a vote. So you can have that kind of very strict kind of system, or something which is a little bit more relaxed. But the idea of debating amongst the students, I find that they don't really have it quite in their mindset, or am I wrong?
Well, no, that is quite true. In fact, I think the University of Malta is one of the only universities, in Europe at least, which does not have an official debating club. Most of the universities I've been around has this official debating club. I know some of my friends had tried to open one, and I did go to some events. However, participation was rather low, and it ended up then, after a few debates. Our students usually do not know the meaning of debates. I go to some debates where it's promoted as being a debate, however it ends up being a discussion, which is right in its form. However, you cannot say it's a debate when it's not a debate. Another thing which is important to say is that when we students either go on Erasmus or go on an exchange or go to represent Malta in some organization or however, a lot of people notice how the debating skills abroad in Europe especially is much higher than it is in Malta. And the simple fact is, not because they are better than us, it's because they are better trained than us and they have experience in debating, something which our students we lack in. And that is part of the reason for the Model Council of Europe organization and part of the reason for organization itself.
This idea also I like very much of getting the students to think not from their own point of view, but from somebody else's. I think that is something which is really mature. I mean, I know there's a Dr. Johnson who speaks about this. You know, you must be able to debate, perhaps not from the point of view which you agree with, but also from the other point of view.
It's easier to debate with your own opinion or, for example, representing Malta. That was the whole idea, to learn about a new country, research about it, their opinion, what they want to get out of this resolution or about if there's a new legislation, what they want to achieve from this and how they want to move forward. And that's the difficult part, to think like, for example, Romania
or the United States.
Exactly, think like another state, and it's very difficult.
In fact, you didn't actually have anybody representing Malta, did you, this time?
No, this time no. Unfortunately, the person dropped out, but...
What's about, Jean-Paul, about the structure? I don't know whether you were involved with, for example, things like the amendments, or how did that happen? I know there was a lot of discussion about amendments.
Yes, We discussed the whole event, how the amendments, the resolution in the executive, and some executive member like Roderick, he drafted the amendment and the resolution, and we sent the amendments to.
And they were discussed amongst the participants, the panel participants, let's call them that,
yes.
And also people from the audience. Did you have audience there non-panelists?
We did have. Audience, we had like five. Okay. Apart from, we had some lecturers as well from the Institute of European Studies, I think, Dr. Mark Harwood and Mr. Stefano Moncada.
So your lecturers took an interest
as
well.
Yes,
they were very pleased to see you organizing something like this.
Yes.
And what about future plans for the ESO? What are your next projects going to be?
So our next projects, apart from another get together, for we are 9th May. It's Europe Day on the 9th May, and since we're the European Studies organization and we got read the European Studies, so the majority of us, we want to
participate. You're going to participate in some particular way.
Yes, we're going to participate in Europe Day on the 9th of May. We're going to try to plan some events, obviously promote Europe and see what other countries are doing, promote other countries, and involve students, most of all.
On campus?
On campus, yes.
Exactly. I mean, the year is short, so we only have a few weeks left, but as Jean-Paul said, we have a get-together, which usually unites the European Studies course. As Jean-Paul also stated, we're trying to celebrate Europe Day in something or another. We're still deciding exactly what to do. And thirdly, a project which we're working on as well is a report, which links to what I was saying, how the future of lectures should be. We're trying to tackle maybe how lectures can be more stimulating to students, and drawing up this few-pager report where we allocate some time on maybe what the drawbacks of lectures are at the moment and how they can be improved.
Can you anticipate something for us about your thoughts or the general thoughts about this issue? Because it's interesting to note that you are taking an interest in how the lectures are delivered, I suppose.
Well, it's very easy. I mean, when you involve students during lectures, they're going to feel involved. They're going to keep themselves up to date on news. When we have lectures which stimulates us, we usually get to know the topic without actually learning stuff just for an exam. And also we are trying to look at other faculties. For example, I know the international relations do a lot of workshops, do a lot of simulations in classes, and we'd like that to be shadowed by our institute as well.
Sounds like a good idea. And for this activity that you've been, the Model Council of Europe, you did have some help. And I think we'll give you half a chance to mention a few sponsors here.
First of all, we'd like to thank Garba Jelly. They were the main official sponsor. Then there was the Ministry of Education, Delicata gave us all the wine. Farsons gave us the beverages.
Which you drank after the discussion, I hope, not before.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, Europe House, who gave us the venue for free and helped us as well with some stationery. And, of course, Giovanni Bonello.
And as well, I'd like to thank the whole ESO executive, for example, Jean-Paul, Laura, Julia, Wayne, Annabel, and Roderick, where we together, we set up with different other members from ESO, set up this whole event.
It's nice also to know that you want to involve students that go beyond your own institute. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a message that we'd like to sort of get across, that anybody who's interested in Europe can participate in your Europe Day activities or whatever, so that you can involve as many students as possible. Well, I'd like to thank Laura Muscat, Jean-Paul Gatt, Clara Ketkuti and Albert Camilleri for coming to Campus FM today to talk about an activity of the European Studies Organization. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in the series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.